I'm Marco Werman, and you're with The World on this Thursday, a day when Russia is on our radar, on a lot of people's radar, actually, after the news about Attorney General Jeff Sessions. We now know that Sessions did, in fact, speak with Russia's ambassador to the U.S. during the presidential campaign last year. This directly contradicts what the former senator from Alabama said during his confirmation hearings.
I have been called a surrogate at a time or two in that campaign, and I did not have communications with the Russians.
Now lawmakers are calling on the attorney general to recuse himself from any investigation involving Russia or to resign. We're going to start with reporter Charles Maines in Moscow and reaction there.
Well, I think it's being basically portrayed as more sort of witch hunt coming out of Washington, a bit of hysteria from the Washington political elite. We had a Kremlin spokesman today. This is Dmitry Peskov. This is Vladimir Putin's presidential spokesperson. Say that he was unaware of meetings between Sessions and Russian Ambassador Kislyak, but insisted that such contacts were just simply part of the ambassador's job. Peskov went on to repeat Moscow's denials of any interference in the U.S. elections. This is something that the Russians have said all along. And also there, I think there's a sense that this is just another part of this kind of wider witch hunt designed to derail what they see as President Trump's calls for improving U.S.-Russian relations.
So a lot of people feel Trump is under attack.
Yeah, and they've been making that case now for some time. You've seen this kind of shift in some of the coverage following Trump's election, even following the inauguration here. There was so much excitement about the possibility of perhaps the end of sanctions imposed on Russia by the U.S., also the possibility of working together in Syria and a bunch of other issues. And I think suddenly they've looked at, one, the chaos that's come out of Washington in the early days of the Trump campaign, and also just the attacks that they think have cornered Trump in his behavior towards Moscow. In other words, he cannot pursue these better ties that he says he wants because he'll pay a political price for it.
Well, behind the political and legal battle of lying under oath, as you mentioned, is a conclusion drawn by U.S. intelligence that Russia interfered in last year's presidential election here, and that may have tipped it in Trump's favor. Does anyone in Moscow acknowledge this is a possibility?
Essentially, no. Even when you talk to members of the opposition, for example, Alexei Navalny, who's essentially the nominal leader of the opposition, and I asked him about these allegations into the election hacking, and he said, well, okay, even if we were doing something, there were so many other factors. To say that Russia was the main factor that managed to assure Trump's victory into the White House, he finds that unconvincing. He pointed out, for example, the FBI investigation into Hillary Clinton. Also, I think there's a sense that no matter what the Russians did, it's still not enough to make people in Ohio, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, and other places essentially pull the lever for Donald Trump. So still this is Americans, you know, making the decision themselves and casting their votes.
I saw one quote from Russian television that the whole of America smacks of a madhouse. How would the Russian people you speak with describe politics in the U.S. these days?
Well, I mean, to them, you know, just in terms of the coverage they've seen, of course, they had a very positive view of Donald Trump coming out of this election, given some of the nice things that he appeared to say towards Russia. And they looked at that as a real promising new presidency. But on the other hand, I think they're also a little bit, you know, kind of curious, as most of the world is, by this figure who is impulsive. And in some ways, I think he, you know, can sometimes remind you of an oligarch or something out of Russia's 90s, you know, the sort of the attraction to wealth and gold and things like that. It sort of reminds of that time to Russians.
Now, earlier this week, President Trump gave his address to a joint session of Congress and not one word about Russia. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think, like a lot of people, I think it's pretty obvious. He's, I think at this point, Mr. Trump would love to talk about everything other than Russia. And I think the Russians are perfectly happy not to be in the headlines for once.
So one final headline from Russian media on this, this one in a newspaper called Today. It's time to end our love affair with Trump, goes the headline. What is your sense, Charles, of where U.S.-Russian relations are headed?
I think the reason you're seeing that from the Russian side, again, is looking at all the sort of chaos that's come out of Washington. There is a growing sense in some of the columnists and some of the pundits here that, you know, maybe a Trump presidency isn't here to stay to the very end. I think they look at the possibility of impeachment or the possibility that Trump's just so unorganized that it doesn't make sense for Moscow to hitch its wagon to a Trump administration in terms of any kind of partnership of any real meaning. So the sense that you're giving here is that Moscow should pursue its own policies. And if they align with Trump, that's great. But if not, that's fine, too.
Reporter Charles Maines in Moscow. Always good to speak with you, Charles. Thank you.
Thank you, Marco.
Let's find out more now about the man at the heart of all the Trump-Russia intrigue, Russia's ambassador in Washington, Sergei Kislyak. As we now know, he's the one who spoke multiple times with two key members of the Trump campaign team last year, Michael Flynn, who was forced to resign as national security advisor, and former senator, now attorney general, Jeff Sessions. Washington Post correspondent Ann Guerin has profiled Ambassador Kislyak. Ann, thanks for being here. First of all, who is he? Who is Sergei Kislyak?
Sergei Kislyak is a rather unlikely central figure in this drama. He is about as classic an old-school diplomat as you can get. He's quiet, rumpled. He stays out of the limelight. He doesn't tweet. He rarely goes on television. He's not a guy you would finger as sort of any kind of subversive political actor in a, if you were going to cast this as a television show. But he's actually very much unsurprising to be in the middle of all this when looked at it in a different way. He knows everybody. He gets around town. He will be seen usually in the front row or maybe as far away as the third row in important foreign policy discussions around Washington. He seems to know just about anybody who's served in government in the last two or three administrations. He seeks meetings with whatever the current administration is relentlessly. And he's a guy who just about anybody who has dealt with the Russia file or any kind of current pressing international business in Washington over about the last 10 years would have encountered at some point along the way.
Now, in media reports, Kislyak is sometimes described as a bureaucratic functionary, the diplomat that he is. Sometimes he's described as a top Russian spy recruiter in Washington. Which is it? And is he himself a spy?
Well, we don't have any indication in the usual ways that, he is. It's very, of course, very intentionally very hard to tell. Embassies, both ours and theirs and everyone else's, are, of course, often hotbeds of espionage activity. And I will say that in Russia, the lines are a lot more blurred between who is and isn't a spy and what is and isn't espionage activity. The kinds of things that Kislyak is now under examination for having done here would, on their face, be ordinary course of diplomatic business. He was seeking contacts and meetings with people who had the ear, clearly, of one of the two top candidates to be the next American president. American envoys do much the same thing. They are seeking information overseas about candidates to be president or leader of the countries in which those American envoys are serving. And they feed that information back home. And, you know, it's obviously useful to people making decisions back in Moscow, just as the same kind of information would be useful to people making decisions here in Washington.
So these encounters, you're saying, are not especially rare. What is outstanding here is the fact that Jeff Sessions lied under oath.
Well, he certainly appears to have forgotten something very important when he was describing his contacts with the Russians, which is that Kislyak had come to see him in his Senate office. Now, the explanation, of course, from Sessions is that that meeting was not in the context of the campaign.
Just to be clear, even though Michael Flynn has stepped down and Sessions is now feeling the heat, there is still no solid evidence, no smoking gun, that Team Trump tried to get the Russians to sway the election. What is your take on Kislyak and his role? Could he have been involved in the hacking of the U.S. presidential election?
As the top Russian official in the United States, he really would have had to have known on some level about the wider Russian effort to disrupt the American election, which is the charge that American intelligence agencies have leveled and which Russia denies. He, in fact, was asked about Russian hacking about a week before the election. He spoke at the Detroit Economic Club, and he said, well, we certainly take note of this, and we deny it. But he also spoke a little bit more expansively about the fact that the role of Russia had become such a divisive issue.
We have become kind of collateral damage in the fight between the two parties here.
He expressed some surprise at that and said that he felt like Russia was a punching bag.
Washington Post correspondent Ann Guerin, thanks very much for telling us about what you know about Ambassador Kislyak. Really appreciate
it. Sure, happy to do it.